I'm here today as participants in a book who question from an academic point of view the charter value of Quebec, and in particular its impact on Quebec minority and inter-community relationship.
So how do you feel this charter has influenced inter-community relationships?
I feel the charter is a resultant of a long erosion of inter-community relation, which is not limited to Quebec and is present also in the federal space with the anti-immigrant and anti-refugee law. But in Quebec, because the issue of language and identity are burning issues since always, it manifests itself in that field. So the charter, which obviously emerged for political reason, is creating a big upheaval among community and, I would say, awakening profound fears. In the neighborhood where I work, people who found Canada and Quebec as a safe haven are now re-experiencing fears that they had before they left their country of origin. They have the impression that this can lead to more discrimination and much more conflict, and they're questioning their safety here.
So could you mention which neighborhood you've been working in, as well as if this is something new which has come up with the charter, or whether this was something existing before which the charter has kind of added oil to the fire, so to speak?
So I work in Park Extension, which is one of the neighborhood of new immigration of Montreal, and also in Côte des Neiges, in the Citroisesse de la Montagne, which is a primary care center there. What we observed is that after 9/11, the inter-community tension began to increase. On one hand, community felt threatened because there was, on the radio and on the different medias, a lot of negative portrayal of Muslim communities, but also of immigrant in general, immigrant becoming a source of threat. The community at that time began to affirm their identity more. So the school would begin complaining because young girls would wear more the hijab before, or kid would miss school on Fridays to go to the mosque and so on. And at the time we worked with the school to try to ease this inter-community tensions through more of a dialogue. At the time also, I did an empirical study which proved that perception of discrimination in Quebec had jumped 100% in 10 years, so from 97 to 2007. So you see an enormous increase in perception of discrimination during that time.
So do you think this is actual discrimination, or this is only the perception of it?
Perception of discrimination is, I think, represent actual discrimination, but also represent, it's a bilateral phenomenon. The ambiguous situation tend to be more often interpreted as discrimination, and at the same time there are more ambiguous situations which in fact were the result of, I would say, politically correct discrimination, which is not directly racist or blatant. You just exclude people. You look at them in a certain way. You see, you do not consider them. So all these things which people cannot really say, this is discrimination, because it's implicit forms. Now, with the charter recently, and I'm going to measure that again in Quebec College, which has submitted a huge study to CIHR to work on the consequences of the charter. But one of our hypotheses presently is that the ratio of direct, blatant discrimination versus implicit has now shifted. So from 97 to 2007, there was an increase in this perception of discrimination, but no change in the ratio of direct, blatant discrimination versus implicit. And now I'm convinced that this ratio has shifted and that there's much more direct discrimination, so blatant discrimination, because the charter has kind of legitimate direct discrimination in the public space.
So can you tell me more about this book, which you guys have all co-authored, and how do you feel this book will change things?
Oh, well, the book is a little piece of the puzzle, you know. It's a small, we had a conference with all these wonderful women working in different disciplines. And after that conference, the organizer wanted to publish a book with small pieces reflecting about this debate. So I think it's not a book who will change the world or the debate on the charter. It's just like a little stone adding to the debate and trying to have a respectful voice, and I would say trying to unsplit the debate. And this is important for the McGill community, because for the moment there has been a split between the ROC, rest of Canada, and Anglo-Allo-Quebec, and the discourse on French side. And there's a deep need to bridge the two solitude around those. And I think it's possible, because as you've seen tonight, you have people who are sovereignist and who are deeply Quebecois, francophone, and francophile, who are taking part in the debate. And I think there's a strong need to go beyond the categorical pro and against the charter to move toward a common understanding.
How much do you think this whole charter issue is just a distraction from other issues, economic issues, environmental issues? How much do you feel this is pure instrumentalization?
It is in fact a distraction. I don't know if you've seen the documentary on the, you can look on the web, which is called La Charte des Distractions. And it's interesting, I think one of the most striking piece in this video is an interview of First Nation women. And when they're asked, they ask themselves, so should we keep or not the cross in the parliament? And their answer is, I don't care. I want to get rid of pipelines. So this is really the issue. It's a non-issue. It's a non-issue. The issue, actually, who have influence and power in Quebec, in Canada? The banks, the financial lobby, and so on. What is at risk? Well, certainly our environment. And we're heading toward economic storms. And this is at stake. And inequality in our society are increasing. And this is the issue, and I really think it's the whole charter issue is a distraction. The whole strategy of creating an enemy to unite in time of crisis.
And so you would say that the Muslim immigrants are the created enemy in this case?
They are, I would say, and they are largely for the Western world. They are the scapegoat.
So perhaps one last question, if you allow it. You're all women who wrote this book, and it seems to have a very clear stance about, you know, the stance of women and all of this. The people for the charter argue that it's to protect women that you need to have this this laïcité. What do you say to that?
I say that wanting to save women against themselves and dictate them what to do is as paternalistic and patriarchal as imposing them either a veil or a way of being. And I think this is a deep problem. And the second issue, which to me is central, is that presently I think the veil in our society, and that's my main argument in the text, is much more a sign of resistance than a sign of submission. And it's a sign of resistance toward our society. So it is a sign of anger. But before getting more angry because somebody is angry at you, you should understand why is that person angry. And I think there we're speaking of exclusion.
This is really the last one, I promise. You mentioned who were the first people to forbid wearing a veil in history. Could you speak a little bit about that?
Yes, I didn't know. I read that in a South Asian novel, but it was very interesting for me historically to learn that the Inquisition, the Spanish Inquisition in the beginning of the 16th century was the first one to prohibit the veil. And I think it's very interesting to have this historical reminder of imposed laïcité. The Iran Shah did the same. The Turkish regime, Mustafa Kemal, did the same. They all flunked. And I think this is important to see that secularity cannot be imposed through violence or coercion.